Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to On Texas Football, a little special Saturday edition of the Longhorn live stream. I'm CJ Vogel, joined by Lifetime Longhorns Rod Babers and Bobby Burton. Hey, we got a fun show today, guys. We got a really fun show today. We're going to be talking about the Longhorn teams of past. It obviously starts and stems from the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams and eventually 14. We might even see 16 before it's all said and done eventually, but this will be a fun one. And, guys, I wanted to get your thoughts because it's been in the news recently again, the expanded playoff. Bobby, I'll start with you. What do you think of it? What do you make of the playoff continually adding teams before even really getting an idea of what it'll look like at 12?
You know, my take on it, CJ, and first of all, I thanks for joining us on a Saturday afternoon. We thought we'd do something to switch it up, do something a little different today for fun. I think that the 16 versus 14 versus 12, it's going to be 12 no matter what. They're going to increase it to 14 to make sure at least three SEC teams and three Big Ten teams make the playoffs each and every year. If they take it to 16, those two conferences are going to ask for four. Mm-hmm. And they should. They'll be half the playoff. They represent more than half the good teams, in my opinion.
Yep.
And so I'm really looking to see when it goes to 16 – how this all breaks out. Because if they go to 16, that's where I think you should just buckle down and eliminate the ACC and add the teams from the Big 12 that want to really play for it. Because that's my take on it right now, is the Big 12 and the ACC are clearly going to be behind the SEC in the Big 10. So how do you account for that appropriately? And I'm not sure you can. Just when it's 3-2, that's not an appropriate number. It's more like 2-1, right? So four teams versus two. Rob, what are your thoughts about that?
I think it's pretty obvious, right, that the Big Ten, the SEC are going to offer up the best product. And that's what this is about. This is about offering up the best television product so that college football now can get the most eyeballs, they can get the biggest ratings, so they can produce the most revenue. That's ultimately what this is about, especially with – listen, the college football playoff, it's going to – when it goes to 14, 16, when it keeps expanding, because we're a value-sized society, so we're going to keep on making this thing get bigger, because I think it is actually going to get huge ratings. It's going to be really successful, which means it's going to make a lot more money. They're gonna go head to head with the NFL at one point, because the NFL usually takes over those Saturdays after college football is done. Well, college football now is expanding its season, and the NFL is saying, "Hey, man, we still want to take them Saturdays, so we're gonna take it." So actually, at one point, the NFL and college football and the best of college football is gonna go head to head with the number one television product in America. Of the 100 most watched television programs in 2023, 93 of them were NFL games. Three of them. Were college football games. College football wants to change that, and I think they will. I think college football will double the amount of most watched programs they've had on that list in 2024 just because of the college football playoff alone. I really do think they'll do that. Now, are they going to contend with the NFL? That's not going to happen. It'll be interesting to see that head-to-head battle that happens on that later Saturday when the NFL still decides, hey, man, we're going to put our product on Saturday too. Now, maybe it's streaming and they don't have to really worry about that. But it's interesting that this newer version of college football is all about putting the best brands up, the biggest and the best brands up against the biggest and the most recognizable brands. That's what they want to do. And that's what the college football playoff is all about.
Gerard, I completely agree with you. I read an article from The Athletic, I believe it was, about the fact that Roger Goodell's not – just because college football is going to try to take back Saturdays in January, Roger Goodell's really not having any of it.
Nope.
He's not planning to change any of his comments or the way he goes about it. So they are going to have competition. Here's my question. I mean, why don't they stake out a Tuesday or Thursday for college football? You know, they don't play. Last year's championship, was it on a Sunday or was it on a – I mean, Texas didn't necessarily play on a Sunday for the national championship. I mean, my point being, it usually ties in with the national bowl games. So you could actually start it where it doesn't have to hit on a weekend, but I'm guessing that they kind of want college fans to travel with their team, and that's usually going to be over a weekend.
There you go. Good point. Okay. Great point.
So that's where the hang-up might be, but I'm telling you, your team's in the national championship game, Texas fans are going to travel. It doesn't really – the game could be on Wednesday at 9 a.m. They're traveling.
Because the boss is going too, Bobby. All of them going. Everybody in the company is going. That's why it's all right.
All I know is that month of December is about to be very fun for college football fans in general. I don't know if y'all have seen the tweets or the schedules of what those games will look like with the playoffs loading up. We talk about March Madness, you know, about to start up with the conference tournaments and the big tournament going as well. But when you sit back down and this winter and look at that schedule of college football playoff games, NFL playoff games and everything that matters on the gridiron for both sides, it's going to be a lot of fun. And especially for the teams that are in the college football playoff, because ESPN reported yesterday, Heather Dinich and Pete Thamel, the payouts for the college football playoff teams are getting significantly higher for teams in the SEC and the Big Ten, $21 million payouts just for making the college football playoff. That's a lot of money, especially when you add in the fact how much these teams are making already for their media rights deals. You're looking at a hefty chunk of change already, and it's only going to continue adding to the kind of the change in landscape that we're seeing right now when you talk about the rich getting richer with the NIL, now TV rights, and the college football playoff adding to the pot. Bobby, I mean, another 21 mil after a season you had last year for Texas, it would have made substantial change moving forward.
That's a 21 mil versus five. That's not a small increase. I mean, you're not going from 5 million to 5.5 million. You're going, that's an extra $16 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that pays for every other sport for scholarships. I mean, every other athlete on campus has been taken care of. If you make the college football playoffs.
Yeah.
That's how big that number is. And I'm not saying, that's why college football, in my opinion, needs to break off from the NCAA. They shouldn't be governed, in my opinion, by the same folks. I mean, you know, the term, it's not amateur athletics, Rod and CJ, that we really are talking about, that I think has some fundamental value to folks. It's not that. It's what we call Olympic sports. Mm-hmm. That has value. Like, it's not so much that Texas softball players are amateurs. That doesn't really matter to me. And I say this the wrong way, maybe, but what I'm getting at is the fact that it's an Olympic sport, that does have intrinsic value to the nation. It creates a value of what's going on there and what we can get out of it. You know what I mean? As a country and as a group, I think that's how they need to position NCAA. Is Olympic sports visa instead of just all non-revenue sports or all sports together. Take football out of it. Take basketball out of it. Even though it is a Olympic sport, you guys know what I'm getting at here.
No.
Instead of categorizing as NCAA is completely amateur, it doesn't have to be amateur. Make it Olympic. Make some of them Olympic and separate from there and figure it out. I think that gives them a chance.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Before we get into what we want to talk about today, which is going to be very fun when we go back the last 25 years or so in regards to the changing landscape of college football playoff, how these past Texas teams would have done. Rod, I know you got some takes you want to get off your chest back in the early 2000s there about some teams that probably would have been in the hunt for a national championship. I mean, let's set the guidelines here just a little bit. Starting at 2000, are we working with Bobby a 12-team playoff, a 14-team playoff? Does it? There's going to be a couple times here where that, you know, those last two spots really come into factor here. Let's set some guidelines here before we get into the nitty gritty here, starting at the 2000 season here.
Yeah, I think you go with 14. That sound right to y'all? That's 14. What it looks like it's going to be.
Okay,
I think that
works
fair.
For me. That makes things easy. Let's get to it. Because 2000, this is an interesting one.
Go ahead, CJ.
Texas finishes 9-3, 7-1 in the conference. They got as high in the AP poll as number 5, so they stuck around in that ranking throughout the duration of the season. Mack Brown really starting to figure things out after a 9-5 season in 1999, the turn of the millennium. Again, this is really where you start seeing Texas get into that, you know, kind of national presence here. Finish the AP number 12. We think we make that team. They make the playoff there. 35 points per game, top 10 offense. Bobby, what do you think?
I think we should ask Rod B since he was on the team.
Yeah, I'll say this. That was a team that surprised a lot of people because the talent that Mack brought in that 99 class, they played really early. That was me. I was part of that number one recruiting class. They put us on the field really early. A lot of us got probably should have redshirted, honestly. Guys like Sims, hell, even myself. Hell, probably Corey Redding probably even could have dealt with a redshirt. Remember, Corey Redding ends up being a D tackle in the league, right? So his body wasn't even done transforming when he got to the 40 acres. He was running down on kickoffs when he first got to Texas. I'm talking about sprinting down, making plays on kickoff as a guy covering kickoffs. So he had a lot of growing to do, I think. But that was a class that was really talented. So Mack put that class out there. And much like Sark, his group did a really good job of being able to maximize and develop the talent they inherited. And Mack inherited a lot of talent. Hell, not just Ricky Williams. And now they're talking about, you know, 99 and by 2000 when I was there. I mean, hell, we still had a big Mike Williams who's a first-round pick. We still had a Quentin Jammer on campus. We still had a Casey Hampton, Sean Rogers. Those are guys that Mack didn't recruit. That's guys that Mack inherited, all right? And those are damn good players. So Mack did a really good job of developing those guys and putting those guys in a position to be successful really early on. And then coming behind that, he had the young guys like myself. He kind of pushed onto the field early on to try to contribute. But, I mean, think about that defensive line. You know, you got Casey Hampton and Sean Rogers on that D-line. There's a Aaron Humphrey. I think a Cedric Woodard may have been on that D-line back then. But that D-line was nasty at the time. You know, so 2000, maybe Aaron Humphrey was gone. Actually, I take that back. I think he was gone already. But I think that 2000 group, they probably would have lost the first playoff game, depending on who they played. I don't know. It's a real matchup-based situation there. If they played the wrong matchup, that team would have got beaten. If it had been the right matchup, it could have been perfect because Hodges Mitchell was highly underrated as a running back too back then. He ended up getting hurt in a bowl game. That group, I think it's all about the matchup because we didn't have the talent level, I think, overall. But in pockets, Bobby, that group was really, really talented.
Yeah. You lost to Oregon and Jeff Tedford and Joey Harrington in the Holiday Bowl, right? That was the game that y'all played in that bowl game. Y'all were 9-2 going into that. Look, the only conference loss you had was to OU, right? And OU played in one of the big bowls that year. So I feel like Rod, y'all would have been in. But to your point, I don't. You know, you're the one that was on that team, and for you to sit up here and say, I don't think we would have went deep. That's kind of what you're getting at, right? You just maybe we get through the first game, but we don't go deep in that. You just didn't have the horses. But 2001, I think, is a different story.
2001 was a fun team looking back. And Rod, again, I want to get your thoughts because this is really where you start seeing Miami and the dominant teams that they have take college football by storm on the national level. Texas starts the year preseason top 5. And then we kind of see the snags of playing Oklahoma 4 or 5 straight years in a row. You lose in Dallas those years. And that era of college football, that knocks you out of what you would have hoped to have been, at least controlling your own destiny of getting it to the national championship game or in that BCS era of what you would have wanted to be at the end of the season, correct? So,
yeah.
Interestingly enough, you know, you have a top 10 offense. Your defense really takes a step forward as well. That is a team with a lot of dogs right there. Yeah, a late season loss in the Big 12 championship to Colorado. Rod, you talked about this previously, you know, some late season losses for some of these teams that you were on. Is that a loss looking back on that, you know, you might look back and say that kept us from playing for a national championship?
It did. If there's a playoff back then, I'm telling you, that team was a damn good team. Now, you got to remember that Mack Brown was really hesitant on playing freshmen in starting roles as freshmen. Now, he wanted guys who were sophomores in 2000. I was a sophomore. That's why I ended up being a starter then. But he was almost vehemently opposed to it. Like, it was like, nah, you're a freshman. You can't play. I don't give a damn how good you are. If you're a prodigy. You know, Seth Benson comes in, and Seth Benson is that. He's a prodigy. And he didn't play Seth Benson early on. He comes in and spot roles as a complimentary player, but didn't play early on. And then we lose to Oklahoma. And I believe after that, the pressure comes on and Mack decides, all right, you know what? You're not a freshman anymore. You can play. And I don't know if we got said, be safe. I'm not mistaken. I still think he gets to 1,000 yards there without even starting for the first part of the season. And that was really the key that got that offense going. That really took the offense to the level. Defensively, we played man coverage. Carl Burris was the defense squad. We played man coverage, almost exclusively man coverage. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the first year Coach Aquino comes in, right? 2001. And Coach Aquino has a brilliant strategy to counter Oklahoma's air raid offense that comes into the Big 12 and takes over. He's like, you know what, man? I need cover guys everywhere. If you can't cover, you can't be in the secondary. Because the Big 12 was still, they were still running triple option. Nebraska was still running old school option when I got to the Big 12. I'm not joking. Like, that was real. They were still running 20. Hell, Texas was running 21 personnel with actual fullbacks like Matt Trissel and Chad Stevens. Like, it was, Texas should have been running spread personnel, 11 personnel with Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, Sloan Thomas out there all the time, you know, with a Bo Scaife when he was healthy, and then a Seth Benson. That's what Texas should have been. They weren't actually all the time. That was situational. They were running old school offense. So Coach Aquino was like, no, I just want DBs who can cover. So that's what led to Quentin Jammer going to move from safety to corner, me playing corner, Ahmad Brooks moving from corner to safety, Nathan Vasher, who's a corner playing safety. Guys, we could cover. We was probably the best. I'm not joking. Us in Miami, go look at Miami secondary. They were legit. We were probably the best covered secondaries in the country. I'm not making that up. That was real. And that was the key to that group. 2001 could have won another game. What happened in the Big 12 title game, the Colorado team we had already beaten. Guys, remember, on one play, my man Sims throws a pick. On that pick, Seth Benson and Big Mike Williams are trying to tackle the defender running down there. They smash into one another, knock each other out of the game. Mm. We lose two first-round picks on one play.
In that Colorado two game. Top 10 picks.
Two top 10
Well, I mean, not those weren't guys; those were dudes.
Yeah. You
know, the one thing I would say, look, that team definitely would have been in the playoff and probably would have went far. The question:
they would have won a game at least. We'd have won a game.
But even then, Rod, there was the great debate of Sims versus Applewhite.
Hey, we had them both. With
this. You had them both, but Mack didn't know which one to play all the time. You know, and you know he even went and played Chris, I think, first in No, he didn't play. Major came back and won the Holiday Bowl against Washington.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
big time comeback. He was a focal point of that. But there's no doubt that team would have been there. But I still think that the quarterback position was enough that it may have hurt you a little bit there. You had everything else. To your point, you had great receivers. You had great D-line. You had great running back. You had everything else. The 2002 group, and this is where it's funny, CJ, you go to the next group. I think you can make an argument that five teams in a row go to the college football play. I really believe that. That was the thing about Mack Brown. He was not in that time frame, and Rod, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I thought Mack was a very good coach. He was not a great coach during that time frame. He coached a lot not to lose, particularly against OU, I felt like. And then it kind of clicked, started clicking 04, 05, primarily because he had Superman at quarterback at times.
Yep.
But you look at 03, you lose to Washington State in the Holiday Bowl, not Washington, but Washington State. VY kind of comes out, takes over for Chance Mock. What are y'all's thoughts on that? You know, and where you went from there? Because that's a team that I thought had a lot of the pieces, to your point, Rod, but wasn't all the way over the top.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if you look, I like how you said it, they could have made it 6 years in a row. I mean, you could argue they could have made it more years in a row than that, because Texas would have gotten the benefit of the doubt a lot from the selection committee, because they would have been on that run and be like, nah, Texas is in. We want Texas in. So I'm with you. I think Texas would have been on a hell of a run and making the college football play, especially if it was 14. Hell, man, they could have got up to six years in a row or more. Mac would have had a shot in there. The question is, because of you're right about this, Bobby. I love it, man. We got to keep it real. Even when keeping it real goes wrong, you know, Mac Brown's coaching style would have also limited Texas, because at times Mac played, you know, he coached not to lose. He would coach, you can call it coaching scare at times, whatever you want to call it. There were times where I think Mac would limit his teams, and it wasn't until Vince Young took over that Mac decided, all right, you know what, we're just going to let it be a player-led team. Matter of fact, I'll just kind of get out of the way. I'll let this team go and kind of cruise control, let it regulate itself. I was good enough to recruit these guys, to recruit the right guys, to set the culture. You know what? Now, actually, I think the worst thing I can do is to overcoach this group. Let me just get out of the way and let VY and company do their thing. And I think that was kind of the brilliance of Mac, because early on, I would say that Mac was tinkering a little too much with things when I was there. And he probably should have let some of the leaders take over things. And they were obviously, you talked about an Oklahoma game. There were times when Texas was coaching too conservative. There were some Oklahoma players that at times said, hey, man, we knew the plays that were coming up for Texas. Now, whether that was because they actually knew the plays or Texas was so predictable offensively, you can debate that. But so I'm with you. I think Mac, and he transformed, like we've seen Sark do, by the way. Since Sark got it, Sark ain't the same coach he was when he first got it. Sark's different. Sark's coaching differently. He's evolving as a coach. I think we saw Mac evolve in that mid-2000s from the early 2000s coach.
I should go back. 2002, they beat LSU. Roy Williams went wild against LSU.
We beat Saban.
Chris Sims made some money that day, too. Mm-hmm. He made some money that day. 03 was a loss to Washington State. So 02 was the win in the Cotton Bowl versus LSU. That team would definitely been in. 03, I don't know if they would have definitely been in, but I think they would have been at 14 teams. What do you think, CJ, just based on
your research? Yeah, no, I was going to ask, going back to 02, Rod, that's another team where in the current landscape of college football playoff, you're fighting for a bye, right? You want to get in the top four, kind of make your way around further. That's another season in which you look at a late season loss, this time to Cliff Kingsbury, who had probably career day on the field against the Longhorns that day.
Wes Welker,
six touchdowns, 473 passing yards. Really, really helped cement himself as an elite, you know, Big 12 quarterback at the time. I just real quick, take me through what that last kind of week was like going into, you know, the Big 12 championship week as well. And what was that mindset of the team of, you know, we were a top five team at the time. We lose, you know, we allow a pretty, you know, pretty big outing to Cliff Kingsbury in the DB room, especially. What was that message from Dwayne Aquino like?
No, it was brutal, guys. In 02, because we had a chance to play for BCS, playing the BCS championship, or at least be in the BCS game, I should say, and play for the Big 12 championship. Wes Welker, I believe, had over 200-something all-purpose yards. Go look back. That was Cliff Kingsbury had a coming-out party, but so did Wes Welker on us. Mm-hmm. And it's because of injuries, guys. I want to say Nathan Vasher went down. Kalen Thornton went down in that game at one point. Derek Johnson went down in that game. We had a multitude of injuries. Go back and look. We had at least three or four starters go down in that game at one point. Some came back, but some left and never came back in. We were in Lubbock. It was nighttime. Freaky, crazy things happened. And honestly, I'll blame myself in that game because Wes Welker went off offensively. I can't tell you how many third downs that dude converted. Him and Cliff Kingsbury were in the zone together. It was some Colt McCoy, Jordan Shipley type stuff going on. And I was playing the outside corner. A lot of our young DBs were playing because that was those young Bucks, young Cedric Griffin, young Michael Huff's out there. We had a young group out there. I should have told Coach Akina that I was going to nickel. I didn't. I watched it happen. I watched Wes Welker, you know, come with those little option routes in and out and just abuse Texas. I should have stepped up. I would have had a better chance to defend them than the young Bucks. I had played nickel before. I knew how to do it. I should have went there and did it. Coach Akina would have let me do it too. He trusted me enough. That was my senior year. I'm like, nah, let me do it, Coach. I got him. And we didn't do that. And they ate us alive from that slot position. And the thing about that was, I heard Bobby, you talk about this. You wrote an article about it, which was interesting. That slot receiver wasn't. It wasn't something that was weaponized until Mike Leach did it. And it was around my time when I was a young DB at Texas where he started to weaponize that slot receiver, that small is quicker than fast slot receiver. And we've seen it over and over again. And that that was a textbook way to weaponize it against Texas that night. Helped them win that game. No question.
Absolutely. 3 years. I want to say this. 3 years later, Greg Davis did the same thing to OU in the Cotton Bowl. Or 5 years later, excuse me.
Yes. Oh, Shipley.
Moving Jordan Shipley from the outside to the inside.
Boom.
He created a slot receiver where Jordan could play anywhere as a receiver. He really could. He was intelligent, fast, quick, all of those things. Knew the game inside and out. But when he made that, OU had no answer for it.
Nobody.
That's when Texas won 45-35. But it took Texas 5 years to do that. Shouldn't have taken so long, you know, exactly. Is my take. But again, those 02, 03 years, 04 is undeniable. 04 is just, I mean, Texas was 11-1. They beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. The single loss was to OU. It was a big loss in 2004. And then that sets up 2005, which frankly was, you know, Texas won the national championship. So though, I really think over 2000, 2001, 2002, 3, 4, and 5, 5 years in a row, 6 years in a row, I think Texas goes to the championship.
And the question is, how often do they win a game?
As it's set up today, if we were to look at it in retrospect.
The question is, how often do they win a game? Like, how often do they win? Like, you know, 05 wins it all. 04 could make a run. They could have actually made a run to win it all. I think they could win multiple games in the playoff. 03, I think they lose potentially in the first round. I don't know if 03 wins it. They're not ready yet. I think 02 wins a game, just one. I think, and I'll be honest, this is my group, all right? I think we win one game. I think that's about it. We were limited, like you talked about, Bobby. I think 01, we win one game because our defense was nasty. I mean, that was a top five defense in the country. It was legit. 2000, we lose in the first round. So that's the question is with how far do these teams go? 05 wins it all, of course. And then now we're at 06. 06 loses in the first round. Mac Brown didn't even like the 06 team. Mac Brown.
I don't know that the 06, because 05 – 2000 to 2005 is actually 6 years, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the 06 team doesn't make it.
Okay.
You know, they were 9-3 going in. They beat, it was a rookie or freshman Colt McCoy. They beat Iowa. Jamal Charles had a great game against Iowa. I could see that. But that from then on, you take the next step. I mean, you think 07 to 09. They're definitely in.
Definitely.
And so you could be talking about 9 or 10 out of 11 years. 9 out of 10.
That Texas
would have been in the college football playoff. That's why I go back and say Texas, even though they didn't win as many national championships as Florida, Texas would have been the team of that decade if they weren't the team.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Of that decade. They would have been in the college football playoff 9 out of 10 years.
And it's fair to say that would have changed Mac Brown's legacy forever as a college football coach. because you're right, the narrative will be different about if he was making a college football playoff like that every year and then able to make a run to the college football playoff every year. And I would say that you're right about 06. 06 probably doesn't make it. I think they finished like 13th or something like that. But I think the committee would have given him the benefit of the doubt because of the run they had been on, and go, you know what, man, Texas is in. That's Texas, baby. They've been here. They've been in the playoff every year for the last 6 years. They're in, and I think they would have got the benefit of the doubt. So you could argue the run would have still kept going and wouldn't have skipped that 1 year, and then 07, you're in again.
Yeah, there are two teams I wanted to touch on just briefly about kind of the narrative that, you know, the media plays a big part of when it comes to perception of teams nationally. You know, over the last couple of years, it's always been Alabama, 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 because they've put it on the field. They've put guys in the league. At the time, Texas in this run, does that reputation precede them and kind of give them that benefit of the doubt? The first team was 2003. They had the You see the kind of spurts of Vince Young, of what he's about to become. 1,000 yards rushing that year, really exciting. That running back room at the time, Cedric Benson was really in his prime then. The offense, 43 points a game, sixth in the country, high-flying running attack again. With where they finish years past, do they get the nod? That's my question for 03, because they do finish 12th or 13th in the AP poll. They're right on the outside looking in. And then 2006 again. Redshirt freshman Colt McCoy coming in. I mean, this is a guy who loses to number one Ohio State early in the year. Texas is still hanging around until probably week 9-10. Texas loses back-to-back to A&M and Kansas State. Those are two losses in the back end of that the last 3 weeks of the season there. Is that too much there that kicks them out?
Colt got hurt.
That's true, too.
Colt got hurt. That's when the Aggies came up with the term Cart McCoy, because he went off in a cart.
Oh, wow.
With real class there.
Wow.
I don't think they do, because I will say this, and Rod's right, in that there would have been some pull media-wise to put Texas in because of what they had done the previous number of years. But it took Colt all of that time to get better.
Yeah. Okay.
In my opinion. I mean, he was not, you remember that, Rod. I mean, he was playing with one arm against A&M.
Yeah.
I mean, he really was. And so I feel like that was a difficult one. It almost, CJ, you weren't around at that time, but everybody remembers or knows about the time in the Alabama game that he went out with the pinched nerve or whatever happened in his shoulder. Well, the same thing happened to him in Manhattan. That week, and he went out, and they had to put Jevon Snead in the first quarter after Colt ran a quarterback sneak, by the way. It looked like an innocuous quarterback sneak, just a normal – remember that, Rod? It was just like a normal play. He ended up coming out and couldn't play the rest of the game. So, that 06 team was questionable the rest of the way. I mean, 07 was in, 08 was in, 09 was in. Those were –
Did you say 07 is for sure?
Oh, I think so, yeah. 10-3.
You think so?
Yeah.
I agree.
Colt did not have a good sophomore year. One of the biggest surprises, by the way, for those people that weren't around, is Colt's maturity. A lot of people thought he had peaked his freshman year because he had a very mediocre second year. Mm. What did he go, like 24-10 TD interceptions? Yeah. Rob, that sound right?
Slight regression.
Then he made this unbelievable step, CJ, from his sophomore to his junior year.
Oh, he became crazy.
The Colt McCoy that we know.
Crazy. It was like his arm got stronger. It was weird.
His arm got stronger. He got stronger.
More accurate.
More accurate. More quicker with the ball. Quicker.
To make it was crazy.
I mean, all of it.
I asked about 2007 because Texas starts out top 10 team, top five. Suffered back-to-back losses to Kansas State, in which Colt did not play well. 200 yards, 4 interceptions. Loses to James Johnson and Jordy Nelson at the time. So a little sneaky, good Kansas State team. Lose the next week to Oklahoma and Dallas. Now you're sitting in that 19-17 range in the AP poll. The resume at the time, looking at it here, you play two ranked teams. The first is TCU that you take care of week two. The next is Oklahoma. You lose. You don't get another opportunity to get back to, I guess, resume boosting, like you talk about in college basketball, even baseball to an extent. Is that enough there still in your eyes to get into a 12-team playoff there? December 2nd was that final poll. They were 17th.
12-team, no. 14, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's kind of where the change comes in.
Look, yeah. Go ahead. I see what you're saying. The loss to A&M may have pushed them out of it in that season. Yep. The loss to A&M may have pushed them out of it. I feel like a lot of people, again, I could say they may have missed in 06 and 07, to your point, and only gone 8 of 10 years in that decade. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that.
I hate to be the spoiler of it, but
problem that I'm going to have.
No, I agree with you.
We're going to skip forward to 2010, and I'm going to be pissed off the rest of this next decade.
Well, at least it'll go by fast, Bob, because you'll be like, that team make it? No. That team make it? No.
There were two what I would call decent teams in that decade. 2012, they beat an Oregon State team with David Ash.
Yeah.
Good team, not a great team, 9-4.
Yeah, but not great. Yeah.
And then the 2018 team that beat Sam Ellinger, beat OU in the Cotton Bowl, then lost in the Big 12 Championship. They beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. But Texas had, I mean, people don't realize this, that, I mean, Texas did not have losing seasons like until back in the 50s, okay?
Right.
And then they had three in a row, 2014, 15, and 16.
Yeah.
Charlie Strong
really didn't make my high school days fun, I'll tell you that.
No, exactly. I mean, so, look, we can split the rest of it. 2020, Tom Herman's final year, they went 7-3, but we all know that was kind of a 7-3. They beat they were really 6-3, and then they played a Colorado team that I think had 20 scholarship players at the time. So, I mean, you know, I look at the 2000, that aughts, or whatever you want to call them, and say that was – Rod, you played in it and you started it. It was the golden era of Texas football in some ages. I think the 60s and 70s were as well. That's a different era, but good stuff overall. I want to say thanks real quick to one of our sponsors. Then we'll get to a couple questions. We'll talk a little bit more about all these teams that would have made it. 2023 definitely would have been it. They were in it with a 4-team playoff as well. But I want to say thank you to Laura Baker. Laura is our friend over at Keller Williams Realty with the Andy Allen team. Laura has been with us from the get-go. She has been a tremendous asset for us at On Texas Football. She does not have I talked to her earlier today, or texted with her. She does not have an open house tomorrow, but she will have one next week. If you're in the Austin area and want to get by and check out the houses she has to offer, or if you need an agent in Austin and looking to list your house, moving from, to, or within, give her a call. 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. Laura at andyallenteam.com. She really is a good person and someone you can trust with your business as well. All right,
Rod, I got a question for you here.
Let's do it.
And this is a little bit, you know, going back to our previous conversation about finishing a season strong and the way that we kind of expect Texas to maintain this, you know, kind of national presence with the way that they're building rosters at the moment. That last game of the season every year, you know, that not only could have big implications for Texas for seeding, for clinching, but for A&M as well. How, you know, the emotion, I guess, of that game is heightened exponentially going into that game. But now that you have the opportunity to bump a team out of the top 12 or top 14 and maybe end their season earlier than expected, what would that look like in a week of preparation, on a short week of preparation going up against Texas A&M, in a which you could end their season short of a college football playoff and vice versa?
You know, I've always said when you play against rivals and they're rivals in marquee games, right? And sometimes rivals are marquee games. I tend to believe most coaching staffs are doing research and doing a lot of game planning in the offseason for those big marquee games. We know that from Sark in Alabama. Right. We know we can tell you that from the way they bounced back against who they played, Wyoming after that. Right. A lot of game planning and preparation, like the hype for those big marquee games. So oftentimes I don't really worry about the players being ready to play for those games. You should be ready to play for that. I mean, Mac Brown, when he was recruiting us, he'd be like, you know, hey, man, we got to beat the Aggies and we got to beat the Sooners. Got to beat A&M. We got to beat Oklahoma. That's what it's coming to do. It's part of this. That's part of the deal. And because he knows, like, if I lose to those schools, I ain't going to have a job very long anyway. Yep. That's like Michigan, Ohio State kind of stuff. Like, you losing to the Aggies and you losing to Oklahoma. Well, I mean, it really doesn't matter how you do against the other schools. At one point, the clock is ticking. So he recruited guys like, hey, man, have that mindset when we're working out and when we're training. You know, those are his marquee games every year. Those are teams you got to beat every year. Back then, we weren't playing big-time non-conference games. I mean, your non-conference games were against – and I'm not saying I think we lost a couple of those too. North Carolina State, Stanford. Shouldn't have lost those games, but they weren't necessarily against – they weren't marquee big-time games. They weren't against blue blood institutions or anything like that. We just didn't come to play and underachieved in those games. And we had like five kicks blocked in the North Carolina State game. Good Lord. Changed football forever, by the way, on the 40 acres. Mac Brown used to devote like two periods to special teams before that. After that, it was like five periods devoted to special teams. And actually worked out. We became one of the best special teams programs in the country, but I digress. So I don't worry about guys having a letdown for that those big games, because those are marquee games. I think coaches are kind of hyping up those games, even in the offseason, about your rivals. But yeah, now you know it's added. Now you got a new kind of added element of pressure to it, because now, yeah, you can play spoiler to a team late in the season, especially where a lot more on the line. So I think guys will rise to the occasion in that big game. I mean, you got a rival. It's a game that's going to be hyped up. I mean, that Texas Texas A&M game will be bigger than Texas Oklahoma game for the first time that I can remember, probably since I came on the 40 acres in 1999. Was the last time Texas A&M was bigger than Texas Oklahoma. Ever since then, it's been Texas OU. A&M was coming off winning the Big 12 title in 98. People don't remember that because y'all dogged the Aggies so damn much. They just won the Big 12 title in 98. I came in 99. Hell, I decided between Texas and Texas A&M. A&M was the big dog in H-Town at the time, whether y'all want to believe it or not. That's the truth. And the Longhorns came in and then kind of just shifted the narrative really quickly in that regard. But in 99, Texas A&M was a bigger game than Texas Oklahoma. And then Bob Stoops comes in, wins the national title in his second year. And then everybody looks at Mac Brown like, all right, you know what? That Heisman and those nine wins ain't enough, brother. You need to pick it up. And then that changes Texas Oklahoma into the marquee game, because all the chips got pushed to the middle. And then A&M got kind of pushed to the back burner, because I remember the tone changing around. They weren't mentioning A&M as much after Stoops wins that national title and blows out Texas in the same year. We didn't talk anything about the Aggies. I can tell you that right now. They did go, unfortunately, to the back burner for us. It was like, man, Oklahoma's the big dog. And now not only the big dog of this conference and our big dog rival, but they're the big dog in college football now. Oh, that's a game changer.
Yeah. A&M fought through two coaching changes. Mm-hmm. Dennis Franchione and Mike Sherman. Neither of whom Sherman left. Franchione, from a technical perspective and the option that he ran, gave Texas some problems because Texas lacked speed at linebacker.
They did. I remember that.
Yeah. You remember that, Robert Killebrew? Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Robert and all those guys. Yeah. But they lacked true speed, and that speed option gave Texas some true problems with Franchione. Then they moved to Sherman. A&M moved to Sherman, and he stockpiled talent on that team like nobody's
business. O-line talent.
But just didn't have a penchant for play calling in the clutch. That's Mike Sherman. Mike Sherman, great coach, great program guy, did not have a great feel for play calling in the clutch, in my opinion. And that's why they ended up going to Kevin Sumlin. Yada yada yada, but you know that's another part of that reason why, Rod. Basically, Mac Brown's success in Austin ran R.C. Slocum out of town, or to the bench, whatever you want to put it. Hey, we want to say thank you to a couple of sponsors, or not sponsors, but to a super chat, Edmund Lee. Thank you so much, buddy. Yes, we passed the 39,000 subscriber mark on All Texas Football. That's one of the reasons why we're doing that today. We want to say thank you to everybody. If you like this video, please hit the subscribe button, like it, et cetera. It helps us in untold ways. Go to Ryan Nelson's next, if y'all don't mind. Matt is Matt Hutchinson, our behind the scenes. Bobby, thoughts on a potential 24-team playoff? That's a lot now. I mean, you got to win five games to win it all. Is that right? Or four?
Division two has 20 in Division two, basically like 24 or some team, something like that.
I don't know. I don't know that.
It is. I think it is. I want to say it's something like that. It's a bracket like 20 something teams.
If you did that, you would have to stop conference championship.
Yeah, too many games.
Yeah. I mean, then you're talking about an 18 potential 18 game season for college players. Now, if they're paid, Rod. If they're paid,
Do it.
Yeah.
28 teams. The tournament,
Division two
football championship, the tournament field subsequently has been expanded three times to 16 teams in 1988, 24 teams in 2004, and 28 teams in 2016, says here.
Wow.
So, you got a model in front of you. To hell with it. Just do it. Let's go.
You do that, though, do you just completely take away the value of the regular season? I mean, that starts diminishing the value of the regular season, because I do not think 28 teams is a lot, or 24, whatever the number is. I want the regular season to mean something still.
Yeah, and absolutely.
One thing, the NFL is great with parity, right? So how many teams make the playoffs? 12 out of 30? Is that right?
They expanded it. It's now 14.
Is it 14? 14. So yeah, half 14. The teams. But half the teams are good is the difference. 50 teams in college football are not good teams. Nah, I wouldn't say 28 teams in college football, Division One, are good. I don't see – it's like some of the 65th team in some of these basketball tournament, in this basketball tournament, they get beat by 35 points. That's not a game.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You don't want to see that. Then you start diminishing the idea of what a championship means, while also taking away the value of it. I can see it going as high as 16 and being okay with that. Any more than that, I think you're overdoing it.
Bobby, do you think we'll see a reverse of course for SEC coaches, administrations to keep, you know, an 8-team conference schedule rather than move to a 9? The way that you look at it, you schedule your one marquee game, you throw a team in, you know, the middle of November for, you know, a makeshift bye. Is that a way that you can kind of load manage your roster with the expanded playoff? Or is it, hey, the money's going to run everything, get that extra conference game in there, and let's keep these ratings high as a result? And, you know, if you make it, you make it. You good, you don't, end the season, move on to the next. You look at Texas' schedule right now, Colorado State, Michigan, UTSA, and Louisiana Monroe, you know, that's an extra non-conference game right now that you can kind of schedule and say, all right, you know what? We don't need to be playing Quinn Ewers and C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue 80 snaps this week in compared to maybe an extra Iowa State or Kansas State that you would have had in the Big 12.
Well, your point is, if those four games, right, it's at least an 85% chance Texas wins at least three of them? 95% Texas wins at least three of them? So that's really what you're talking about. Whereas if you add another SEC team, say you add – let's not even add an LSU. Let's add South Carolina.
Sure.
Okay. Not a great team by any stretch, but a capable team.
Yeah.
I mean, they had number one picks. Spencer Rattler is going to play in the NFL. He's not a great quarterback, but can be dicey at times if you don't play him right.
Got some good receivers.
Good receivers. That changes that dynamic. And that's what you're getting at. And I think coaches might like the 8-game conference schedule. I think that the administrators like the 9-game in part because of what it does to their season ticket sales.
Yes.
And I mean, look, have y'all seen Texas's home schedule? If you're not excited about Texas's home schedule this year as a season ticket person, you're nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some value there right now. I mean, you get to see Florida, Georgia. You know, you're going to – those are good teams and much better than what we've seen historically since A&M really left the Big 12 and Nebraska left and all those. We haven't had good home schedules because OU game's always in Dallas.
Yeah, you know? That's a good point. So
I think they want the 9 games for the home schedules. I don't know that long-term that makes sense, because I think you're going to have a better chance to argue for four teams in a 12 or 14 team playoff if you have that extra freebie. If you have four SEC teams that are sitting at 10-2 or better, those all four of those guys are getting in. If one of them is 9-3, an 11-1 Arizona is going to be griping.
Yeah, right? I guess that was where this next conversation was going to go. Is at what point do other conferences get upset at this? And that, like you said, Bobby, that last point with the SEC's kind of reputation over the last couple of years of, you know, boosting records as a result of playing an extra non-conference game, that could be a problem for other conferences to worry about, or whoever the ultimate governing body of college football playoff comes in, if we ever see that. But this has been fun. And it's going to get more fun in 3 days because, like you said, Bobby, we're going to be down there in Austin. We're going to be checking out spring football. The season's kicking off. You know, it's time for the pads to get back, put back on the Denny's Fields, the turf to be beat up just a little bit. And we're really getting close, you know, about 72 hours, a little bit less than that. We will be out there providing some updates, getting a little look, because again, there is a lot of expectation, a lot of excitement. And as Jerry's been saying, it's the anticipatory approach to this offseason is going to be very exciting. To your point, for Texas to make the college football playoff, is there a one single topic or one single part of this team that you're going to be looking at and say, you know, if they can figure this out in spring, I feel good about Texas being a top 12, top 14 team when it's all said and done in 2024?
You know what? First of all, I want to, because talking about the college football playoff, the reason that it's important, even talking about moving forward and going back and kind of looking at the history and what would have been for Texas if the college football playoff had been, had been a factor when Mack Brown was here, because now the standard for the Blue Bloods changes. Right. The standard was always, you know, can you get to double digit wins and then playing a BCS game when it was a BCS game or a New Year's Six, whatever. Now your standard now for your Blue Bloods is like, all right, now for Sark, it's like, well, I need you to make the playoff now, because that means what? You're one of the best four teams in the SEC, essentially. One of the best, whatever it may be, best three, four teams in the SEC. Sorry, go ahead, Bob.
21 million.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Great point. Yeah. Even more so, Bobby. Yes. Yeah, the money talks. But yeah, like now, you know, Mack Brown's standard, we were, you know, I remember saying that Mack Brown was a prisoner of his own excellence at one point. The 10 wins wasn't enough. It was like 10 wins was like, man, nobody gives up to 10 wins. We need you to beat Oklahoma, get 10 wins, and get to a BCS game. So Longhorn fans kept pushing the standard of what it was supposed to be. Mack Brown became a prisoner of excellence. Same thing with Sark. Now I think the standard's going to be, all right, I need you to make that college football playoff. If you didn't make the playoffs, then a lot of Longhorn fans will look at that as a disappointing year. So you ain't even got to win the SEC like you used to, though. I mean, you just have to win the conference. Now you ain't got to win the conference. Can you make the playoff? Make the playoff, like, all right, now we got a shot. So that's what I love about now. Conversation, the discourse is going to shift because the standard now for all of these Blue Bloods, all of these coaches, now it changes. Can you make the playoffs? Especially for the big conferences. Obviously, we're talking the Power Four, I guess we're talking about now.
Power Two with two others.
Power Two.
No, you're right, Rod. It defines it. Yeah. There's a definitive level for the first time in college football, maybe a defined level of what would mean success. Now, people may say, well, no, I want a championship. The real success is I want to play for the championship, et cetera. Maybe. But at least it better defines it than when Mac was around, where playing in a BCS was limited sometimes because you lost to Oklahoma, frankly. Period. And they were the big man on campus in the Big 12 at that time. The other thing that we had, UT Boy had this question or comment, that Colt did not have an offensive line at all. He didn't have one in 09 either.
Say it loud for the people in the back. Say it. Truth.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I've talked to several, I mean, the good guys, all of that stuff. But 09, I mean, they could not run the ball very well. And it literally was Colt throwing it to Jordan and a little bit to Marquise Goodwin. I mean, that is basically what amounted. And they got to the national championship because Will Muschamp had a whale of a defense.
Ooh, yeah. Top five.
They had guys coming out there, Lamar Houston, Sergio Kendall. I mean, that, you name it, there were NFL players all over that defense. So, yes, I agree. Not only 07, UT boy, 09 as well.
Give Cole credit. I agree with that.
My one position, you know, you say, what's that one thing, CJ, you asked? It's always going to be quarterback and that person's ability to take that next step. But look, if Texas's offensive line is as good as advertised in the SEC as they move to the SEC, that's going to open up a lot of things for Texas.
Definitely.
And I don't know that we'll know that in spring is my problem, given what we know of Texas's defensive front. So I would say this, as opposed to the Texas offensive line, what I want to see in the spring is not only Ewers and his rapport that he builds with the wide receivers. I want to see if Trey Moore is a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you add a legit pass rusher, like a legit pass rusher to this defense, the calculus changes. If you add somebody that can make game-changing plays, Anthony Hill changed the calculus last year a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not much because he's only a true freshman, right, Rod?
Yep.
But just enough.
Yeah.
Is Trey Moore that guy? Is Colin Simmons? Is Derek Williams now that he's a second-year guy? So I'm looking at edge and saying, I think they could be a strength of this team, and I want to see how bad they get after the quarterback. Obviously, they can't tackle the quarterback. There's plenty of one-on-one drills. So I'm looking at edge kind of with a different eye right now, simply because of what I've been told about Trey Moore behind the scenes.
Well, that's exciting. If Texas can add that, you know, Joseph Asai or Charles Minnehue to a defense, that would
greatly change. NFL dudes. I mean, that's Rod knows what we're talking about. I mean, you're talking about that Texas has not had that guy.
Right.
Joseph Asai, that's a good one, CJ. He was the last one, a force multiplier coming off the edge for you. Spring football is weird because anytime you get the reports about one position doing well or a player doing well, you automatically go, at least I do, I'm a glass half empty kind of person sometimes. I'm like, so if the wide receivers are killing it, that means the DBs are not.
Spring Rod, if you're pulling away with some interceptions, that must mean we got a quarterback issue. That's the case, isn't it?
Exactly. Every glass half full report, I'm like, well, then that means somebody on the team is struggling. If the O-line's playing well, then the D-line's not playing well. So I always have to, you know, balance it out with that. But getting back to the O-line, I'll say this as we're jumping back in time right today and doing a lot of we're doing different like time hopping from different eras of Texas football and comparing them. You know, Texas football was able to still produce high-level athletes, NFL draftable prospects at every position and compete at a high level with every position still, I think, thriving, but doing really well. The O-line was like the first sign of the deterioration of Texas football for Mac. It really was. Because Colt was still killing it. Colt was the man. And going back to the comment from UT boy, you know, Cole was still kidding. Wide receiver was still, I mean, Jordan Shipley and Quan Cosby, they were still great. Actually, I take that back. It might have been O-line and tight end. It might have been those two, actually. Because, you know, even running back, you still had, I mean, Fozzie Whitaker was in the backfield. You're still producing guys that can play at the next level at running back. And on defense, I think we all agree, defense, you know, linebacker, cornerback, D-line, you're still producing high-level players and playing really good defense way after even the decline of Mack Brown, Texas football. But the O-line and tight end, which are very closely linked, even Sark says that the tight end position is his second most important position in his offense behind quarterback. That was kind of the first sign. And we didn't, at the time, we just thought, that's an outlier. Mac's got to figure out the O-line recruitment. He's got to figure that out. And he never really figured it out. And then everything else kind of, the deterioration and the decline of the O-line, everything else followed that. right? Then the quarterback position started to decline. And then what happened to the wide receivers? That started to decline. Everything else. Then we went to, then that's the offensive identity crisis on the 40 acres. Because then the play calling, you started to switch over play callers all the time, and you couldn't decide what you wanted to be offensively. You didn't want to be a ground and pound offense after you lost Alabama. And then we switched to being more of a pro style offense. And then you went to all these different, you know, hybrid offenses. They never really figured it out. That's the identity crisis. So that I'll give Sark credit. I don't think Sark will ever have to worry about that. Sark prioritizes O-line play with big humans. He prioritizes quarterback, and he's able to recruit those two. And those are the two positions I think that started and inevitably really signaled the decline of Mack Brown, Texas football. Most notably, the quarterback. Everybody remembers that. But the O-line might have come first. He might have started ignoring that O-line before he did any other position.
I think David Ash would agree with you in the kind of
– David Ash, Garrett Gilbert.
Yeah, yes. I
mean, it wasn't just. I mean, look. Here's another thing that would talk to you about Rod that would be good for you to look at. You mentioned Fozzie, and I agree with you. Fozzie was a good running back. Malcolm Brown, good running back.
Yeah.
But the one of the chinks in the armor that you talked about, the first things that you saw out of that, they took three running backs in one class. None of them played. Jeremy Hill's good, still around the team today.
Oh, yeah.
Jay Monroe, and then Trey Newton. They took three running backs in one class. None of them were great running backs. Yeah. Now, good play. I mean, I'm good, proud Longhorns, all of them. Yeah. That showed a sign you're getting away from a Jamal Charles, a Cedric Benson.
That's true.
Ricky Williams, where you had that run of dude. I mean, Selvin Young was in that play, rushed for 1,000 yards in the NFL. That started dropping off too. Not to mention quarterback play, obviously, where you had guys that were freaks back to back in VY and Colt, in my opinion. What was that super chat we had there, Matt, if you don't mind?
Yeah. One last super chat here from UT Boy. It's a good one. The most underrated team in history is 2008, in his opinion. That team would have beat Tebow pretty badly.
I have a better defense than OU, that's for sure.
We talked about my shirt collection over the past, you know, some of those vintage shirts. The one shirt I regret never having was 45-35 in the burnt orange letters across the chest. Because I would go to school, you know, middle school, high school every day, whatever, however old I was back then. I guess I was maybe fourth grade, but 45-35 was what I was chanting every single day in terms of that kind of carousel of Texas Tech, Texas, and Oklahoma, and who should have been that team going up against Florida. I think that's a great point, because that team was tremendous looking back on it. And now, I mean, the way that we're going through, you know, that 2000s to today, basically, that 2008 team was robbed of having an opportunity to play for a national championship.
It's the second best team, arguably, since Mack Brown came on the 40 acres.
I think it was better than 2019, no doubt.
Exactly. I was like, you can argue it's 905 is the second best team. You can make that argument.
Let me say this. The defense was better, had gotten better actually late in the year. That 2008 team, because Earl Thomas, remember, was in his first year as a starter. Mm-hmm. And they, even though they gave up 39 in Lubbock to friggin' Michael Crabtree and Graham Harrell, the last three games, 45-21, 35-7, 49-9. And then Ohio State, they beat Ohio State in the Fiesta 24-21. I was at that game. They had held Ohio State to 14 until the fourth quarter with a minute left when Ohio State scored. Damn. That defense had kind of galvanized a little bit. Sergio Kendall had really come on. Those guys,
loaded.
So I don't think there's any doubt it's the second best team in this Texas football last 25 years. Much better than 2009, because they also had more talent at receiver. You know, Quan left the next year, and Brandon Collins didn't return. So, right. 08, you know what I mean?
Yeah, about that.
That's a good point. Hey, luckily, I think we can all agree right now, this 2024 team, at least what we expect to happen, will be the second best team at the very worst in the Steve Sarkisian era.
Oh,
at
least. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey.
I was talking about Steve Sarkisian there. Right here. I'm not that crazy yet.
That was nice. But,
I'm sure the fingers were typing at home for everybody in the chat there as well. But we get a nice little taste of that. All the updates will be coming not only here on the YouTube channel, but on TexasFootball.com. Starting off Tuesday, Wednesday is the pro day. So we're really getting up there. Yep. Bobby, we've been going about an hour here. Is there anything else you want to touch on real quick? Thank you to Laura Baker.
Thanks for everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed a special Sunday or Saturday afternoon chat. We decided we want to do something special for the 39,000 subscriber mark. And then also, we're just excited about spring football coming. I mean, frankly, that's big time for us. Jerry's out in Phoenix right now. I think he's going to a track meet today. I don't think he's going to the track meet. He was going to go to a track meet and go watch Phoenix area high school track, but I think he's actually going to a Coyotes game with his son.
It's good. There you go.
Yeah, hopefully he has some fun out there and has a little fun. We'll be back tomorrow with more. I do want to say also thank you to Laura Baker and her sponsorship. And I also want to answer Patrick Page real quick about Big Sean Rogers and his interview. Thanks for that. He's a great guy. I really appreciated him coming on earlier this week. If you missed that interview, it's on the show or it's on the YouTube channel as well as podcast, wherever you listen to it as well. Do us a favor, like the channel, like the show, leave us a review if you would, if you're on podcast as well. For Rod Babers, look at Jerry Hamilton today. Picture of the Sun Devil. There you go. Nice. Forks up, guys. Forks up. There we go. All right, for Jerry, who's with us virtually, Matt Hutchison, our producer, Rod Babers, CJ Vogel. CJ, thanks for hosting. Y'all take care, guys. Hook them.
Yeah, happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.